This is David Noble in Aberdour Fife, and welcome to this evening's Radio EduTalk. I'm delighted to have on tonight's show Peter Doran, who is currently conducting the Doran Review into complex additional support needs provision across Scotland. Good evening, Peter. How's things with yourself?
Hi, David. Fine, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Sorry, on you go.
No, I was just going to say this is a first for me doing a radio interview, so apologies for any anxiety that might come across.
Yeah, and there's always anxiety on my part as well, that John and I tend to try and work with free technology and do things as cheaply as possible, and there's always things fall apart, but... everything it seems to be a really good quality line tonight. And before I ask Peter to kind of introduce himself and his kind of career to date within education, and I know when we talk about Peter's career, it's in a very broad sense of all aspects of care and education for young people. But if anybody's listening to the live stream and they would like to get in touch with Peter or just comment on what they've heard over the next half an hour to 40 minutes, then you can email the show at edutalker, that's edutalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. Or if you're on Twitter, you can post your comment or question on Twitter, but somewhere within the tweet, if you use a hashtag edutalk, then I'll be able to pick that up during the live show. And the audio will be available at edutalk.cc. It'll be archived there later on this evening. So, Peter, it would be great if you could maybe just speak a little bit about your career to date, and where you find yourself in the present day involved in this this review of policy within Scotland.
Okay. I retired, and I say that sort of with a bit of humour now, from my job as head of Harmony Residential School in Edinburgh. That's a residential school for children and young people, particularly with social emotional behavioural difficulties. In July 2010, and I expected to be gardening by this stage, but in between deciding to retire and trying, Scottish Government asked me if I would carry out this review. So my immediate background before carrying out the review was as a head of a residential special school. So whilst I'm not teacher trained, I've been managing residential provision with education for many years in different settings. My background is as a social worker, but the interplay between children's emotional needs, their family needs, and their ability to access education is pretty obvious to most people in the field. So I think I have a fairly broad view of factors which influence children's learning. Prior to that, I've worked in a whole range of settings over the years, and I've done little bits of teaching here and there, and within further education universities, various bits and pieces. But effectively, most of my working life has been with children and families in both community and, as I say, in residential special schools. So children who go to residential special schools obviously almost by definition have complex needs in the sense that the needs have not been able to be met within their local provision. So I'm extremely interested in positive outcomes for children. I'm extremely interested in how education in the broader sense contributes to young people's ability to cope with adversity and families' capacity to support young people and children who have needs which are more than most. Additional support needs is the broad term, and we're talking, as I say in the review, about complex additional support needs. So in summary, I suppose I've had 34 odd years of working in and around children and families who for various reasons face adversity and need help and assistance to overcome the challenges. And as I say, my particular interest in this review is looking at those children who have complex additional support needs and looking at as much of the systems around them that enable them to you know, access education fully and to benefit in the same way as every parent expects their own, their children to gain from their education. So this review is looking at what helps and what maybe could be improved in the system to support children's learning.
Okay. And it's commonly referred to as the Doran Review, and its grand title, I believe, is a strategic review of learning provision for children and young people with complex additional support needs. Can you say a bit, Peter, about how the review came about? I'm assuming that somewhere along the line, whether it's at European level or UK or within the Scottish Government or Scottish Parliament, that something has prompted, I suppose, this investigation and led through to a good evidence, which we'll talk about later. Can you say a bit about what is the problem that we're trying to wrestle with here?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a wee bit embarrassed about the Doran Review name. I left the room at one stage and others were trying to grapple with making strategic review of learning provision for children and young people with complex additional support needs accessible. So they came up with the Doran Review, in short. So that's the explanation for that, first of all. I mean, ultimately, the objective of the review was set out in the various reports and the briefing papers, which are all available online. And I should say, for anybody listening who's not overly familiar and wants to look quickly, they can go to the website, which is thedoranreview.org.uk, and that will take you into the back, you know, more fully into the background of the review and all of the work that's been done so far. But obviously, in the time we have available, I'll just skim through some of that. There's also a link to Engage for Education website where we've updated at various stages, various blogs, and tried a number of methods to both ensure that there was awareness of the review, but also to begin the process of ensuring that we were actually engaging with people who were involved, either as educators or others, professionals, and families and children and young people in the review process. The background to the review is really that the Cabinet Secretary in early 2010 now indicated that he wished a review to take place into this area of the provision for children and young people with complex additional support needs. There are and have been a wide range of other reviews which touch on some of our subject matter. But I suppose the one of most relevance was completed in 1999 by Professor Sheila Riddell, and reported on, and there were numerous recommendations from that review, some of which were acted upon, some of which weren't. The view was that quite a lot had changed since 1999-2000 in terms of the additional support legislation, GERFEC, and a whole range of other sort of policy and legislative changes, and that it was perhaps a good time to look at all of these areas again. And the original remit for the review was set. That review remit, the original review remit, was basically set out in the terms of reference document. And it's in summary, it said, for some children and young people, their complex range of additional support needs may be beyond what could reasonably be expected of an individual local authority to cater for, and may require access to regional or national provision. The review was set up to draw upon the evidence base held within the community of interest within this area to identify the best fit between the national sector and the national need and make recommendations for short-term and longer-term actions to deliver the best fit. So that was very much at the strategic level, and there were a lot of principles which are detailed and a sense of purpose for the review. That sort of got translated in simple, that gets translated into ultimately the objective of the review is to make a set of recommendations which lead to better outcomes and experience for children and young people with complex additional support needs. And we're looking at a whole range of areas that touch on that. So as well as at the strategic planning level, which was very much at the forefront of the original agreement, we've learned an awful lot through there have been two phases to the review. Phase one, which was completed just before or around about the summertime, and phase two, which we entered into in the autumn of this year. And within phase one, we were particularly keen to start looking at the relationship between, for example, health, education, social work at the child and family level in terms of assessment, decision-making, all of those areas. So we've sort of, I'd dread to say expanded the remit, because trying to keep what was a very broad remit in the first place down to something that was achievable within the timescales has been a challenge. But ultimately, and I think this is what we need to keep at the forefront in all of the sort of complex discussions that happen around this area, and it's a very emotive area as well. If you're the parent of a child or a young person who has complex additional support needs, then inevitably you're going to be emotionally involved, very heavily emotionally involved in all aspects of what's provided. Similarly, there are very strong views held across professions about what works and doesn't work and what should happen and shouldn't happen. So trying to hold on to all of that and make this review manageable, achievable, and achieve, you know, real differences, hopefully, for children and young people and families, has been a challenge. So we've, I don't know if that's, is that sufficient for you, or do you need more clarification on that?
That's great.
So it's potentially a very wide-ranging review, but we're trying to narrow that down and keep within the focus, which has very much been amended by phase two, which I'll come to in a wee minute or two.
I'm wondering if this would be the right point to maybe refer to the interim report. I mean, I had a look over that last week and it seemed really interesting. It was very educational for me, but and that's where you kind of, you know, expand on the kind of terms of reference and what your aims are. But as you produced the interim report, which I think I'm right in saying was last October, What did you discover within the process of writing that report? And did some kind of things jump out at that point about what might need to feed into your final report in terms of recommendations or what the major problems are? You know, did things change in your mind between you starting the review and the interim stage?
Well, absolutely, and I think one of the real benefits, it's called the Doran Review, but really there are a wide range of people who are involved. There's a review project group, and again, the membership of that group is available online, but I've been very fortunate to have together around a table with me an incredible amount of experience and knowledge gained for many years from people working in different aspects of Scottish education, and indeed parental representatives, head teachers, etc., etc. So the working of the review project group was supported in phase one by two subgroups. One was called a National Need Group, and the other one was a Pathways and Decision-Making Group. And again, we were able to co-op some very experienced and knowledgeable individuals to these groups. And as we worked through the various questions that the original remit posed, we, of course, did reach some conclusions, and unfortunately, just because of timescales and other reasons, some of our aspirations for phase one weren't achievable, and we've sort of brought them into phase two. But the general conclusions were summarised in the interim report, and I think what was the most impressive thing for me, and it's an obvious thing to say, but it probably is worth emphasising, the commitment across those who are professionals, parents, carers of young people with complex, you know, those who are involved either in immediate sort of meeting of needs, be it in education, allied health professionals, social work, social care, and the parents, children, young people themselves, the commitment to and I should add from Scottish Government, I've been really impressed by the commitment of Scottish Government, both ministers and the civil servants, to really, you know, that commitment to making a difference and making policy and legislation work in the best interests of children and their families. So that commitment was very obvious. Once eventually, of course, conclusions from this review might well be embraced by some and not embraced by others. I think the one thing that the whole community shares is a genuine wish, regardless of their particular interest or perspective, in making things better. So that was an overarching thing. I mentioned the emotion earlier on, and I want to just mention that again. I think because there's such an emotional content to decision-making around all children, and particularly children with complex additional support needs, one of the challenges has been to hear that emotion and hear the very strong views and opinions, and also reach conclusions which are achievable, and we have to live in the real world of public sector financing and all that everybody else is facing in the real world. So there are real challenges in that as well. So some strong views were very much heard, and some of them would have been views that were shared by many. Some of them would be views that are shared by particular groups. And we were impressed by the openness with which people expressed their views and dealt with that. So the overarching conclusions for phase one were sort of mixed. Some of them were about strategy and policy issues, and some of them were about experiences of those who were involved in the education of children and young people with complex needs. A couple of things we found: trying to get a sense, the national need groups struggled to get really good information and collect really reliable data that would be helpful in strategic planning processes and in identification of needs which might require to be met at regional or national level. And that's something that we're very much working with and continuing to work with in phase two. There were very strong views expressed about interagency cooperation and the interplay, the complex interplay of factors, which could be improved upon. So there were lots of views about equity of current resources, for example, where you lived in the country to some extent might determine what services were immediately available to you locally or not locally, and there's a very uneven spread of provision. So, for example, the main providers funded by Scottish Government currently would be the 7 graduated special schools, which are predominantly across the Central Belt. And of course, even if you take a spread of independent sector provision across Scotland, again, it tends to be very unevenly spread geographically. So issues of local provision versus national provision, distance from home, all of these costs, etc., come into play. And so that, there was quite a lot of focus on how is current national funding used, how effective is it, how efficient is it. And of course, as I've mentioned several times now, there are very strong views held about whether or not there should even be national provision. The views that everything should be provided in the local school, in every local school almost, compared to those who would have a very strong view that some services are just so specialist that they need to be provided in centres which, for cost and other reasons, need to be located somewhere, and regardless of where they're located, they're going to be distant from some in Scotland. So the other strong view that was expressed by parents was that despite the best intentions of professionals and authorities, not all parents felt that services were easily accessible, and very strong views about the process that some parents have to go through to secure the services that they believe their children need, and that process can sometimes become adversarial, and it becomes an unhelpful process. So these were some of the sort of broader conclusions that we were able to elicit from phase one.
And You know, going back to my reading of the interim report, it's interesting when you spoke about the various contexts in which this review is taking place, and I suppose the biggie is the economic climate, but there's also been many kind of or legislation that's come out recently, as well as kind of government documents that have come out of maybe previous reviews or through policy formulation by the government themselves. We have the Education Additional Support for Learning Scotland Act 2004, GRFEC, Curriculum for Excellence, Early Years Framework, More Choices, More Chances. Briefly, I suppose, if we're talking about, rather than kind of this systemic level needs and require changes, if we're looking at what's actually going on within establishments, within schools, and the way that practitioners are working with children and families, which of these documents do you think is or legislation is kind of most important? If you're talking to practitioners, let's assume that a lot of people have got a kind of working knowledge of Curriculum for Excellence, which are the other documents that you really feel that practitioners need to get a handle on, whether it's to improve their self-evaluation, their reflection and reflective nature of themselves as a professional, or to actually contribute in their own way to improving the experiences or lives or outcomes of the young people that are working with?
Well, you forgive me for saying all of them.
Yeah.
and I'd be reluctant to sort of prioritise. I think within the interim report, the annex papers particularly, there are some very well-written papers which bring together the whole, the legislative and the policy frameworks. I think the frustration that I've heard a lot from individuals, both teachers, other professionals, and particularly parents and carers, is that there's no shortage of policy and potential legislation. What I think gets lost in the mix sometimes is how those policies are interpreted locally by different authorities and different professions. And the experience, I think, of the parents and children and young people trying to navigate their way through the various policy and legislative frameworks and the interpretation of those. I hope this review will be able to say something positive about how policy and legislation frameworks can be made more accessible and feel less. I know certainly as a practitioner, as a manager, to be honest, I think everybody would agree with this. You would groan at the next directive or the next document that arrived in your desk, and when you're in cynical mode, you would think, what difference on earth is this going to make? And I suppose one of my anxieties about this review is that this doesn't become another document that lands and raises that question, well, what difference is this going to make? So I hope I hope we'll be able to demonstrate that we can have a review, we can hear the opinions, we can place those within the financial, political and legislative and policy frameworks that exist, and make some sense of those in terms of coming up with clear recommendations about how, what difference could be made in terms of the outcomes for children, if that makes sense to you. So rather than get bogged down in trying to place them in a hierarchy, I would say that there's some really, formidable work being done over the years, and the energy of those who've been involved in previous work or work that's currently going alongside this review is not to be disputed. I think there is a challenge for us all, and I'm facing that challenge and making sure that, as I say, we don't become another dusty document that really doesn't make or can't show that it's made that much of a difference. Mm-hmm. So I am very keen on getting down to the experience of people, and I suppose that might take us into looking at what we're doing in the second phase of the
review. Yeah, of course, absolutely.
And I'm very keen to use this opportunity to sort of communicate to as wide a group as possible about how we're seeking to gain those experiences. The second phase of the review, we took a lot of the learning and some of the over-ambition perhaps that we had in terms of the remit, and we tried to translate them into a smaller number of areas that we were really going to focus on. And the remit, there were four areas that phase two of the review is looking at, and we're due to report, I should say, within a very tight time scale now. I'm due to present a report to Scottish ministers, by the summer. And so we're in a very active phase now of engagement. The four aspects of the remit for phase two were, firstly, what are the barriers to the efficient interaction action between local and national provision, and how could this interaction be improved? The second part of the remit was, how can we improve assessment and decision-making? And I think some of your audience, those who are teachers and working in classrooms, will have a very strong interest in assessment, decision-making, how children and young people are placed in what schools, what resources are available to them, are the schools and the teachers adequately supported to meet the needs that are developed through assessment and decision-making process. And again, I'm sure you'll have, as a teacher, heard the discussions about children who are, to use the phrases, inappropriately placed or not placed in the right place or not in my classroom, et cetera, et cetera. There's a huge amount of work in there. The third aspect of the remit is, again, back to sort of more strategic look at what's the role that Scottish Government should play, including the current use of national funding in ensuring that every child and young person in Scotland has their additional support needs identified, prioritised and met. And that's across all provision, including local authorities, the independent sector and the grant-aided special schools. And the fourth aspect we're looking at was really, what lessons can we learn from other international models and from research to deliver better outcomes for children and young people? So on the fourth one, we've been greatly assisted by Strathclyde University, and they are undertaking on our behalf a sort of a literature review, which should be complete in March, it'll be by the end of the month, and we're hoping that that will also both answer some of the questions we've raised, but also point us in the direction of other practice models, other ways of organising that we might benefit from. Having said that, I think we really want to look, and I would want to say this loud and clear, at best practice that already exists in Scotland. I should have said this several times earlier on. The amount of really good practice and effective working together that exists in Scotland is something that Scotland can be proud of. The problem is, as always, it's patchy. It's variable. Sometimes it can be variable within authorities, and the question is, how can we make what's already good and happening happen more, and give the opportunity for every child and family to experience the best practice. So those four questions we're now really focusing on. In order to address the first three, we have gone live on a call for evidence, which is now available on the Doran Review website. And that call for evidence has gone out to a very wide range of people. It's open to really anybody with an interest in the education of children and young people with complex needs. And it sets out sub questions to try and help get the experience of both professionals and parents and carers and young people. And I would encourage anybody who you come across, or anybody you can promote the call for evidence to, or anybody who's listening to EduTalk, to go on the website and have a look at the questionnaire, which is relatively straightforward to complete, and to please do that. We're also hosting Children in Scotland. We're trying to maintain the independence of this review, so I'm using a number of organisations from Strathclyde University. Children in Scotland are hosting three parental events. The dates and times will be announced very shortly. But they're going to be towards the end of March, and I think at the moment we're looking at Aberdeen, Edinburgh and Glasgow. And again, we're hoping to engage as many parents in these events. So the voice of parents is extremely important to us. We've got a wide range of meetings with professional groups, some of which have already happened, some of which are planned to again hear the views and get the experiences of those groups. So there's quite a comprehensive approach to engagement in phase two, plus the working group that I have in phase two have been looking and working extremely hard in producing papers around the issues and the remit questions. So we're very busy between now and probably into the end of April, but the call for evidence questionnaire is live and it's open until I think the 13th of March. So I would be very keen that we use this opportunity and your contacts, perhaps you can promote the call for evidence. And for those, as I said at the beginning, who aren't overly familiar with the review, all of the much more detail than I'm able to give tonight is available on the website. And I think the questions, the complexity of the issues and the fact that the issues touch on everybody, whether they're a teacher in a mainstream school, a special school, or in national independent provision, or you're a parent of a child with additional support needs, I think there will be lots of strong views, I think, and very helpful views that we want to hear on in terms of people's experiences.
Okay. We're just coming into the last 10 minutes or so of tonight's show. If you're listening to the live stream online, you're listening to Peter Doran, the former chief executive of Harmony School in Palermo and presently chair of the Doran Review into provision of services around young people with complex additional support needs. If you would like to, sometime in the last 10 minutes, email the show with a comment or a question for Peter, then the email address is edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. That's EDUTAL. And if you're on Twitter, you can just put a comment or question up there. If you can just include the hashtag edutalk, then I'll be able to pick up what you have to say. That would be great. You spoke there about that you're kind of you've referred to your engagement strategy throughout tonight's show, Peter. And I'm just wondering about what. And this is, I suppose, going off on a tangent somewhat, but what have you learned about in this particular instance around what works and what doesn't work when you're trying to engage with, I suppose, many different types of organisations and individuals, families, right across the country? I mean, one would maybe suspect that some people would say, well, technology is the answer. That would be one way to attract people to give their views. But in terms of technology, what's worked and what hasn't, in terms of face-to-face, how have you gone about that and what have you learned in the process?
Well, certainly the call for evidence questionnaire is available online and the capacity of individuals to register their interest and be updated on the work of the review is also available through the website. We're trying to balance that sort of use of technology with really engaging face-to-face, so that the meetings I mentioned in across the country with parents are face-to-face, the meetings with organisations, even though an organisation or teachers' organisations or other groups may well submit their formal responses to the review through the call for evidence, which is available online. It's also available, if necessary, in other formats. We're really complementing that by taking some of that material and going out and trying to talk to as many people at different levels in the delivery of services or the receipt of services as we can, and try and just get past the straightforward questions, as I said, and engage more in a conversation with people about some of the real complex and challenging and controversial issues.
Yeah, and you spoke about the looking at international models and such like, and you're saying that people are working on those reports just now. Has anything come out from... You're talking about good practice, but good practice internationally, or any current research that's maybe come in to your thinking since the interim report?
Well, I mean, we have looked at an awful lot. There are various websites which, at a European level, we've looked at the American government report on their services. We've looked at other international models. I'm really waiting, if you like, for such a wealth. If you're an amateur Googler, you can get distracted for days following links and getting into stuff. Well, I'm not setting up University of South Clyde and Dr. Graham Connolly either, but I'm hoping that what we get in terms of the call for evidence return is a clear steer and some sort of summary of what's going on. Also, I mean, I mentioned Professor Riddell earlier on. I was very pleased that I was able to meet her and look at some of the recent work which is available on, you know, that she's been doing in terms of looking at practice across Europe. So I think what I'm hoping for is when we receive this summary report, we'll be able to get a clearer steer. But yes, I mean, we've had conversations with a wide range of people who have got international contacts, and we've been able to visit either their websites or some of their research, and just trying to bring that into something that's manageable and useful in the Scottish context. However, I will repeat what I said earlier on. We are very keen, and Educate in Scotland have been extremely helpful in pulling together from, you know, their reports and their inspections and their overview of current learning provision. We really benefited from being pointed in the direction and indeed visited some of the excellent schools that exist around Scotland who are doing a really good job. So, you know, whilst we want to learn from international experience, and we certainly, I think there's a dearth of research, to be perfectly honest. That's what I'm expecting to be told. There's a dearth of actual research into issues facing children and young people with disability. And I think this maybe well be something that needs picked up at a later date in terms of outcomes and what does work. So I'm not dodging your question by I'm really saying that's why we commissioned this piece of work. So whilst I have a broad view and a very broad view, and others have a more detailed view of what's happening around the world and particularly in Europe, I'm hopeful that we'll get a clear steer on what we might look at a wee bit more from the work with commission from Celsus and University of South Clyde. I should have added in as well that Celsus have been extremely helpful, and they're also on our behalf going to be undertaking some more in-depth conversations with a smaller number of families and possibly those working around families to add some real sort of meat to, you know, the responses to questionnaires and people's experiences, and they'll be doing that piece of work for some more qualitative in-depth analysis of people's experiences.
And when you say Celsus, Peter, am I right? So you're referring to the former...
Oh, sorry, that's the Centre of Excellence for Learning and Social Work. Previously, it's based in the University of Strathclyde, so that's a nationally funded group. And again, the Celsus CELCIS website gives a very clear idea of the wide range of work that they're doing, particularly around looked after and accommodated children. Mm-hmm. Many of the children with severe and complex needs, depending on the provision, could well be looked after and accommodated. And of course, equally, there are a large number who are not placed in educational establishments by their parents and local authorities, but not under any other legislation.
My final question, Peter, is maybe again going back to what happens in practice and the current policy context. I mean, I'm making an assumption here that many listeners will have heard of GIRFEC, Getting It Right for Every Child. I'm just wondering whether, you know, you're in a position to make a comment on how that particular policy and the major implications for practice since it was published a couple of years ago, you know, whether that has taken root at all. I would say, from as somebody who works in a setting with looked after and accommodated children, that we are very aware of how that plays out in practice. But I would suggest that many teachers who I work with or speak with, the preoccupation, understandably, is around curriculum for excellence, and there's clear crossovers, of course, and the various issues around assessment that are playing out at the moment or on the horizon. So, Are you in a position to say about how you think GERFEC's actually been implemented and you know, what effect it is having or what effect it should have?
Well, nice to end with a question like that, David. I think what I'm particularly keen to do is to make sure that this review talks to the development of GERFEC, because the issues around this sort of planning for children and the interagency cooperation and sharing of information leading to good decisions and good implementation of planning around children is at the heart of GERFEC, and it's certainly going to be a major focus of this review. So in terms of us wishing to, and indeed the people who are supporting me from Scottish Government who are involved in policy are talking very clearly to their colleagues across government who are working in different areas, and particularly GERFEC, and we will be wanting to make sure that we make the best use of existing processes. In terms of GERFEC, my personal views are that in some areas it seems to be something which practitioners, and I think that was your question, can talk fairly comfortably about and can see an impact already in other areas. I think particularly with teachers, it doesn't seem to have got to the point of being noticed that much, if I can say it that way. But then again, we're in early stages of rollout, and as I say, some authorities have been leading on this and perhaps are further ahead, understandably, than some other authorities at the moment. But we certainly want this review to be very much seen in the context of these other developments, particularly GERFEC. I mean, the whole issue, as I said, of around single plans for children and where they fit in with other mechanisms such as CSPs, etc., etc. All of those questions have come up in discussion, and as I say, we'll be part of our focus in the final report as to how these various policy initiatives, as I've said earlier on, sort of relate to each other.
Okay. Peter, I'd like you to thank you again so much for appearing on Radio EduTalk tonight. It's been fascinating listening to your work. And can you just repeat the website address again? But we'll put a link on the EduTalk website. But
my children have been very impressed that if they Google the Dorling Review, their dad's picture comes up on the government website. So it's as simple as that. www.thedorlingreview.org.uk. But just Googling the Dorling Review, we'll get you onto the website, Scottish Government website.
Okay, that's great. And if anybody...
And I would really encourage, I mean, obviously, as I said at the beginning, it's quite a nerve-wracking experience having a radio interview on the phone. And if I haven't done justice to some of the questions that you've asked, which were really good questions, then I think that the material on the website will fill in the gaps for those who've got any particular interest in what we're doing. And hopefully will encourage anyone who does look at it, who has got a view or an experience to share, to look at the call for evidence and to see what they might contribute.
Okay, and tonight's audio will be archived at edutalk.cc, and people can also leave comments or get in touch with the show, and I'm sure we can pass anything that comes through onto you, Peter. So thanks again. Best of luck with phase two of the review, and I certainly look forward to reading the final report when it comes out.